The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Tonight we continue on our journey together through the 59 slogans of the Lojong teachings on compassion. And we've moved all the way almost to the end of point six. And tomorrow morning we'll begin point seven. But for tonight I wanted to talk about slogan number 37, which is don't make gods into demons. Partly because, let's face it, that's just such a great slogan. I really like the more poetic ones, and I'm drawn to them. And don't make gods into demons drew me right away. And one way that they drew me was they just reminded me of some of the legends that come at the beginning of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, when a succession of bodhisattvas from India were bringing the Dharma to this wild land that comprised what is now northern Nepal as well as Tibet and maybe Bhutan too. I'm not 100% sure what all it included, but it was certainly not what we think is Tibet today, but a larger area. And one of the first, if not the first, of these kind of missionaries was Padmasambhava. And he and other early Buddhist teachers who were also Buddhist yogis who came to Tibet had to struggle with all kinds of demons, because the indigenous people in Nepal and Tibet already had a religion. If Buddhism is even a religion, they had a religion called the Bonpo religion, and this religion had a number of demons, and the demons didn't like the Buddhists coming and threatening to displace them, and so they sometimes had to have epic battles with these demons using their miraculous powers and marvelous Dharma activities. And I may have this all scrambled, by the way, but one of what I think is my favorite legends is that Padmasambhava was struggling with some demon that then kind of manufactured a demon army with his or her demon magic. And Padmasambhava had a flying snow leopard helping him. And he magically turned the flying snow leopard into 108 flying snow leopards. And I guess if you've got 108 flying snow leopards on your side, you've pretty much won. And so so this demon backed down, as did many other demons. But here's where it ties into our slogan for the night, is that many of these demons converted themselves to Buddhism and became Dharma protectors of the Dharma. And so when you see Tibetan art, Buddhist art, you might be surprised the first time you see it, that it doesn't have quite the serenity that we might associate with many Asian representations of Buddhism, bodhisattvas. But there are also these fierce, I mean really ferocious demons with big fangs and blood dripping down their chins, and bulging eyes and big bulges in their foreheads over their eyes, and claws for nails, and they look terribly ferocious. And they're ferocious in protecting the Dharma. And so the Tibetans know something about turning demons into bodhisattva protectors. But I guess they also know that it can go the other way around, and gods can be turned into demons. So what does this mean in terms of our practice? Don't turn gods into demons. Don't do this Padmasambhava thing in reverse. And it means a couple different things. And one of the things that it means that Norman Fisher talks about is don't take your perfectly wonderful life and dwell on the imperfections of it and how it could be better and things you don't have, because then you turn your life into a kind of hell. And we just read together the beautiful poem Spring Everywhere in the Sutra book. And so this is the kind of inverse of Spring Everywhere. If you accept whatever is happening to you as what should be happening to you, and in fact what is the only thing that could be happening to you, why? Because otherwise it wouldn't be happening to you. It must be the only thing that could be happening to you if it's happening, because it's been brought about by countless causes and conditions, including your own previous actions, but that's just a small part of it. And nothing else could be happening. And so the writer Iommi counsels us to embrace this. And there is true happiness. And Norman Fisher warns us that we can perform again the opposite bit of magic, and we can take a kind of, you know, fine life, living, breathing, human body, access to the Dharma, all the things we really want, food, clothing, shelter. There, here it is, it's about 3 degrees, I think, outside, and we're fine in here. And then find all these awful things about it to complain about. And, yeah, now we've turned a godlike life into a demonic one. And for the Tibetan writers, it means something else. It's coming after a lot of the Lojong teachings, and so they tend to say things like, well, you know, you can take these very Lojong teachings and you can make them adverse. You can just use them to build up your ego. And this is from Tralag Hyabgan's book, The Practice of Lojong. And he makes this point pretty succinctly. And then he quotes something that I want to quote to you. So he says, let's see. He says, some people start to become extremely conceited and arrogant about their Lojong practices. And of course, we could extend this to any practices we do, any Buddhist practices, feeling and acting quite superior to everyone else. They may have started out with sincerity and enthusiasm, but this gradually became corrupted when they began to turn something beneficial and worthwhile into something egotistical and self-congratulatory. And so this Lojong commitment is about being aware of our demonic tendencies and resolving to avoid their temptations at all costs. And then he quotes Shantideva, the 10th century Indian Mahayana Buddhist who wrote The Way of the Bodhisattva. This is Shantideva. All the harm with which this world is rife, all fear and suffering that there is, clinging to the I that has caused it, what am I to do with this great demon? And so there's our self again. There's that clinging self. And what am I to do with this great demon? Oh my gosh, I've thought that. Not in quite those words. I'm glad I have this phrase for it. Because I've looked at myself and its tendencies to self-importance, even with Dharma practices, and I've said the equivalent once I recognize it, which sometimes takes a while, what am I going to do with this great demon? And I'll tell you a brief story about that, because I find it's useful to talk about my own experience in relation to these slogans. And so I am the practice leader at one of our practice groups, the Henry David Thoreau practice group, which is, I think, now our oldest practice group and probably our largest one. and I'm very fond of it, and I've spent over a dozen years with it and seen it through some changes, and I've become attached to it, and I've tried to give a lot of service to it more and more each year, even when I was not practice leader, but Bob Waldinger was practice leader, I was so grateful to him for keeping the group going that I said, you know, I'll show up pretty much every week and I'll make sure everything's set up and you don't have to worry about it. I want you to worry about orientations and teaching and making people feel welcome as only you can do, and trust me to do the setup, etc. And so I did. And people would help me, and I usually got there first. It was just, I didn't have as busy a schedule as Bob. There was a certain way of doing things, and I would teach it to people, and we made it into a new location and set it all up over again. And then very recently, we had to move again. We lost actually the whole little hidden campus in the heart of Newton was sold to a benevolent multi-billionaire who was using it for some other benevolent purpose. So we had to move. And Bob and I came and kind of figured out how we would manage this very tiny storage space, half of what we need. But if everything's done just in a certain way, which I had pioneered, and then Bob came another time and helped me sort of, you know, perfect it. Perfect it? Is it perfect? Probably not. But I thought it was. And I left instructions when I came here to not alter this, because there was one way to do it. And it would not work any other way. So I came here and enjoyed the retreat. And then after 9 days of the retreat, I really didn't want to leave. But I had to go and teach my classes that Monday. BC had started, Boston College where I teach, so great, I could go to Hank, and all the more important because Bob had a fall and couldn't come the Monday before, so the people that often come early to help me, they had all set up and put things away, and I went to the closet, and I opened the door, and it had not been done the way I wanted it to. And as a result, you know when a preteen or early teenager has just stuff all over their room, and the parent comes and says, "If this isn't all cleaned up in 2 hours, it's going out on the street." I've heard those words. Perhaps I've said them. And you come back in 2 hours, and the room is pristine, and you open the closet, and everything's jumbled in, and it all falls out. That's how this closet was. Except that the door opened in, so you couldn't open the door of the closet. Everything had just fallen in. It was total chaos. Things had been added impossibly to the things that barely fit. And I was a little bit miffed. And I think I said some things like, I said there was one way to do this, or everything would fall in against the door. And now we can barely get in. And I'm going to have to yank stuff out one by one. I didn't say, I hope you're happy. but I think that I conveyed it without words. And then I went to where people were coming in. And I think they could see I wasn't at my best. And I needed to be, because they were all worried about Bob, and they had missed me. And I should have been, you know, making everyone feel really, really, really appreciated for having Open Hank in a new location with minimal, you know, training to do it without either of us the week before. But I didn't do that. And I settled down, and I read a really beautiful letter from Bob, and that kind of softened my heart. And, you know, I think the rest of the evening went pretty well. But, you know, I felt terrible. And I felt that I had let that demon, the self, out. I let it go on a little romp when I should not have. And maybe the moment I shouldn't have. And I tried to make up for it by being very kind to people, At the end of the evening, but, you know, there it is. So now the trick is not to make gods into demons the other way. I think the evening worked out. I think people felt okay when they left. I think they'll come back. I know I'll come back. I think that the people who came early and set up without either Bob or me will continue to do that and know that they're appreciated. And so I don't now want to think that I've turned my life into hell, where actually it's probably pretty good and waiting for me to come back in just a few more days and go back to being the weekly practice leader. And I hope that I learned something again. And this is a lesson that I have to learn again and again and again. Not to turn gods into demons, and not to let that demon, the self, have its be taken off the leash quite the way that I did early that evening. And that's the lesson that I pass on to you. So let me read those wonderful lines again. And then, if I can find them, and then that will be the end of our evening together. Well, I can't find them. So, what I will do is read the slogan again. So, slogan number 37: Don't make gods into demons.